Face the hammer.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. Well, this is my first podcast ever. I hope you enjoy it, and we got a lot to talk about, and I hope you'll join me for future podcasts too. A little bit myself, I'm an Army veteran, did 8 years in the armed forces, went over to Afghanistan once, yeah, that was a fun bit, and I've worked in law enforcement too, so I got plenty of real-world knowledge on both those subject matters, and I am 100% a constitutional conservative, seeing as how I've sworn an oath to the Constitution twice. Well, anyway, let's dive into the issues for this podcast, and like I said, we got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to it. So the first thing I want to talk about today is conspiracy theories. So, everyone remember how the left used to characterize the right as the conspiracy nuts? Yeah, well, guess what? The shoe's on the other foot now. The leftists are the conspiracy nuts. And I'll prove my point here. So this is CNN. Robert Reich. Now this guy, Robert Reich, used to be the labor secretary under Bill Clinton. So you'd think a guy in that position would know better, right? Yeah, well, guess again. This guy is completely off the reservation, and it's pretty incredible. Just watch, well, listen here, as Robert Reich is explaining to CNN how these rioters, these Antifa rioters, were in fact right-wingers. Yeah, get a load of this.
Seen the before air for part of last night, and I know what I saw. And those people were not Berkeley students. Those were outsiders, agitators. I've never seen them before. There's rumors that they
were part. Okay, first of all, Robert, seeing as how your last name is Reich and you're a socialist, you're literally the last person in the world who should be commenting on who is or is not a Nazi, or a communist for that matter. But yeah, okay, so he's already trying to lay the foundation that, well, hey, we don't know who they are. We don't know who they are, and hey, they could actually be a right-winger. Yeah, he's seriously saying this. Get a load of this.
A kind of a group that were organized and ready to create the kind of tumult and danger you saw that forced the police to cancel the event. Donald Trump, when he says Berkeley, doesn't respect free speech rights, that's a completely distortion. That's a complete distortion.
No, actually, it's not a distortion. When UC Berkeley, which was 100% complicit in this, when they try and shut down Milo Yiannopoulos, this is what, for those of you who aren't aware, I'm sure you are. UC Berkeley had this big riot, and it was over Milo Yiannopoulos speaking there. Yeah, they are trying to shut down his free speech. Because, like him or not, Milo has the right to speak. He has the right to speak his mind. And he also has his right to not be physically assaulted, is protected. And in fact, everyone has that right. So, yeah, UC Berkeley was absolutely complicit in this. And yes, Donald Trump, when he says, hey, we should probably shut down federal funds going to UC Berkeley. No, he's justified. He's absolutely justified. You know, it's pretty incredible that the school from which where this whole UC Berkeley here, the free speech movement, it's pretty incredible that this same school is the one that's now shutting down free speech. But hey, this is what we've come to. And now you've got clowns like him, like Robert Reich, who, again, he used to be in the federal government at a pretty high level, the labor secretary of Bill Clinton. And this guy here is trying to spin that one, Donald Trump, as usual with leftists, that, oh, everything he does is wrong. And two, that these rioters were actually secret right-wingers. Oh, yeah. And he's spewing this crap on CNN, of course. Ah, go ahead.
I mean, Berkeley opened its biggest auditorium to this right-wing Breitbart News character, this hateful, odious person.
Okay, yeah, and of course, we just gotta characterize Milo as this hateful, odious person. You know, I've never met Milo, and I know that Milo sometimes goes around just kind of being a dick for the sake of it, but to my knowledge, Milo's never physically attacked anybody. And, you know, he's funny. I've listened to some of his videos. He's pretty funny. And he seems like a good guy and all. I don't get what all the fuss is about. This is what they're doing. They're setting up this thing to where Milo was basically asking for. That's exactly how the left is framing this. That because of how Milo is in their eyes, Milo was asking for it. He was asking to be attacked. No, he absolutely was not. This is completely unjustified attack by radical leftist communists. And that's what these Antifa rioters, that's what they are. They're anarcho-communists, anarchist communists. Which is kind of an oxymoron, right? I mean, they want to promote anarchy, but what they want is a totalitarian government. A complete, total, centralized government control. That's what they want. That's what communism is. So, you know, this clownish group that it is. But, unfortunately, they're a violent clownish group. Alright, go ahead.
The most important thing we stand for, and these outsiders who caused the police to finally come in and have to cancel it.
Do you think this was a strategy by Yiannopoulos or right-wingers? Did they put this on so they could, in an effort to show or that, you know, there's no free speech on a college campus?
Yeah, I really can't believe that CNN's resident drunk Don Lemon, this idiot, he's actually entertaining this crap. And he's kind of asking, that was a completely leading question right there. Yeah, that's not how you properly interview someone, bud. I know this is a law enforcement officer, too. You're always told not to use leading questions. You want people to talk freely to get the information. If you're using leading questions like this, yeah, you're driving towards a particular agenda. This is how you know when CNN is being dishonest, which, of course, is pretty much all the time. But it amazes me that a CNN anchor, even some clown like Don Lemon here, is seriously entertaining this crap. All right, go ahead.
I wouldn't bet against it, Don. I saw these people. They were very, they all looked very, almost paramilitary. They were not from the campus.
Hey, Robert, guess what? Being paramilitary is very much a communist thing. Now, for those of you who've never read the Communist Manifesto, and I won't blame you if you don't, it's a piece of crap, but if you ever read it, right in the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels talk about industrial armies, and they call for the creation of them. Marx was talking about how the proletariat, the working class, is set up by the bourgeoisie, you know, the rich fat cats, into these industrial armies already with an order of sergeants and lieutenants watching over them. It's very militaristic language. And what Marx is calling for, when he calls for the transformation of society, is the complete destruction of the old society and bringing up a new. In especially developed countries, Marx talks about how you need to have industrial armies set up because you're going to have to impose a despotism, a totalitarian state in order to force this revolution. So this whole militaristic thing, that's where this comes from, this industrial armies thing that's all over the Communist Manifesto. And all you have to do is look at every communist country out there. Fidel Castro was infamous for always wearing military fatigues. Joseph Stalin sported fatigues. Nikita Khrushchev sported fatigues. And his fatigues, because he was a commander, he was a general in World War II against Nazi Germany. You had the Kim dynasty in North Korea. They wore military fatigues all the time. Kim Jong-un seems to be a bit of an exception, but his father and grandfather all wore military fatigues. Che Guevara wore military fatigues and beret all the time. You look at Tito, and you look at Mao Zedong. I mean, all these communist leaders, by and large, they wore military fatigues, and they were very militaristic. That's a common trait with any communist government. It's important to understand this difference. So conservatives, we are pro-military. We support our military because our military, the American military, is for defending us, defending our freedom. Our military is not like other militaries around the globe that are used by the government as a bludgeoning force against their own people. That's not what our military's for. They protect us and protect our freedoms. And that's why we conservatives are very pro-military and very pro-law enforcement, too, because it's the same thing. And that is not the same as being militaristic. Being militaristic is what these Antifa communist protesters, rioters and domestic terrorists, quite frankly, that's what they were doing. This militaristic approach of no debate, no discussion, no engaging in a civil dialogue with the other side, just using violence and using physical force to suppress and intimidate their opposition. That's being militaristic. And the uniforms, they're a part of it. They're a part of the intimidation factor. The black bloc, which is one of the tactics that they like to use. Again, there's a whole intimidation factor. I mean, you just look at any kind of uniform. I mean, a police officer's uniform serves as a intimidation, a show of power. Same with a soldier's uniform. Well, that's why the communists use uniforms, because uniforms are an indicator of power and authority and an intimidation factor. Oh, anyway, getting back to this clown Robert Reich. Okay, Robert, go ahead. Go ahead and tell us how this is connected to the right-wingers. Yeah.
I've heard, again, I don't want to say factually, but I've heard that there was some relationship there between these people and the right wing, and the right wing movement that is affiliated with Breitbart.
Yeah. Yeah, you heard that right. The right wing that's affiliated with Breitbart. Okay, Robert Reich, so let me get this straight. Let me see if I can work this conspiracy nut logic here. So, Breitbart News, which Milo Yiannopoulos is the editor-in-chief, Milo's holding this event, and Milo, along with Breitbart, also hire, just go out and find these outsiders, these bums, these nobodies, pay them to riot and destroy and attack and disrupt Milo's own event. Oh, okay. And of course, you got no proof of this. No proof. Just speculation. Is this honestly what the mainstream media has come to? That they're reporting speculation and rumors and conspiracy nut as reportable news? Is this really what they've come to? I mean, I always knew the mainstream media was really bad, but this is ridiculous that they're actually doing this. I mean, and they get so upset when you call them fake news. Yeah, well, this is why. This CNN is exactly why you're constantly called fake news. Good Lord. Well, anyway, so Robert Reich says, well, he's adamant about these people were not associated with the university. Oh, really? Okay, well, actually, let's take a look at one of those rioters. This is from the Daily Caller. So, there was one of the rioters was using this Twitter handle @TeenArcher, and he was bragging about, look who got knocked out, and basically just bragging that he was a part of this Antifa group. So, there were several people looking into this. There was one particular on Twitter, this guy, Pave Darker. I think he's from across the pond, as it were, over in Europe somewhere. And he he looked into this using just Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And he ended up following the trail and actually led right to UC Berkeley and looked on their page. So this guy who was bragging about being a part of the movement, his name is Ian Dabney Miller. This guy's a UC Berkeley staff member. He's paid by the university. So not a student, an actual employee at UC Berkeley. And the Daily Caller reports this guy Miller did an interview with this SF Weekly. And he plays in some stupid band. And he talked about working at the university. He works in Advancement Communications at UC Berkeley. Oh, okay. Wow. So, it didn't take all of maybe a couple days, and they found out that this guy is a UC Berkeley staff member, one of the Antifa communist rioters. Yeah, so, again, Robert Reich about the whole UC Berkeley having no part in this? Yeah, I don't think so. They absolutely did. And those UC Berkeley students that did actually attack, but they were just part of the protest mob, well, guess what? They were complicit because they were inciting this. They were going along with the crowd. There's just no defending this. There really isn't. In terms of this Antifa group, this communist group, and they are a communist group. They're anarcho-communists is what they are. Well, let's take a look at what their own statements, their own tactics. This is from The Guardian, which is a left-wing rag of a British newspaper. But even now and then, the truth slips through on their reporting. This was from a Berkeley student who apparently didn't want to give his name. We won't put up with the violent rhetoric of Milo Trump or the fascistic alt-right. Yeah, so basically they won't listen to a word they have to say because, well, they don't agree with their opinion. They don't share their opinion. And he identified with the Antifa movement, were willing to resist by any means necessary. Okay, yeah. Lana Wachowski, another protester, defended using the extreme tactics to deny Milo Yiannopoulos a platform. Yeah, so they're gonna make sure that he not only should not speak, but cannot speak. Yeah, they're gonna use force to deny him free speech. The moral imperative is to win. Yeah, okay, so again, basically digging up the specter of history is on our side, we will bury you from the Soviet Union. Yeah. There's something to be said for fighting according to a code. What are you, a damn samurai? But if you lose, people are going to die. People are going to get deported. Yeah, so this is war language right here. It's absolutely acceptable to use violence. They are 100% certain to use it against us. Yeah, it's... So, well, 2 points on that. No, it's absolutely not acceptable to use... unjustified violence, to be the aggressor and use violence. It's not acceptable to do that at all. Not in any civil society, or any society that wants to be civil in any way. It's not. And as for point number two, 100% certain to use it against you. Well, you know, when you use violence, and you go and beat people up and destroy property, don't be surprised when law enforcement uses force to stop you. Because they have to. That's part... Just look at any force continuum for every single police department, every single state, every single jurisdiction. They have to use force in order to stop you. That these Antifa make it so that the police have to use force. They can't. They're not going to be able to stop them with just verbal commands. It's not going to work. And then let's look at one more thing I wanted to look at, which was straight from New York City Antifa's own site. Their own site. Let's look at this. So they talk all over their site about how they oppose all progressive, radical, and countercultural projects that collaborate with the far right, including them using any space. So any business space, any coffee shop, whatever. And we oppose normalizing this behavior. Okay, so these Antifa are expressing the age-old Soviet doctrine of he who is not with us is against us. That's exactly what they're saying. These people are the Antifa. They've straight up said that they will not engage the other side in a civil debate. They're just going to shut them down. They're going to silence their opposition. These Antifa communist clowns are telling everybody what they're about and what they're going to do. They're advertising this openly because they're communists, because they just don't care. And this is a real problem. Back in the 1960s and 70s, and even into the 80s, the most prevalent terrorist groups throughout the world, they were communist groups. And communist terrorist groups still exist. And in fact, right behind Islamic terrorism, communist terrorism is the second most abundant, as it were, form of terrorism. That's what it is. And communist terrorists, I mean, back in, especially the 70s, they're responsible for all sorts of kidnapping and assassination. They went after embassies, and their rallying cry back then was nuclear disarmament, and for them it was disarming the West, which of course, they never did any of the stuff in the Soviet Union, they had been shot on sight. But they're doing this in the West, and of course it was going to bring back the downfall of the West. And that's what these Antifa communists. That's what they're about. They want to bring down the West, bring down Western society as a whole. So just from looking at, one, the UC Berkeley rider who was a university staffer, guy worked and got paid by UC Berkeley. The UC Berkeley protesters, the rioters, who even told reporters that, yes, this violence is justified and we have to use force. And then Antifa themselves, it talks about how they're just going to straight up shut down anyone who doesn't agree with their opinion. And for these Antifa, they consider anyone literally to the right of Stalin to be far right, to basically be a Nazi. They have no tolerance. So even these kind of center-left people in there, no, they hate them too. They'd consider them a Nazi. But this is what we've come to with these Antifa communists. This is what they're about. So Robert Reich, and I'm one guy just looking on the internet, but even I could find this stuff and make an informed opinion about this. But this clown Robert Reich wants to peddle his conspiracy theory crackpot nonsense and blaze it all over CNN, which that tells you something about CNN as a network, too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, and this is the end of this segment. And when we come back, the next segment, we're going to be talking about Trump's executive order and the leftist complete meltdown over it. And quite frankly, they're absolutely hypocritical and hysterical rage over something that, in fact, Trump is doing absolutely lawfully. When we come back on Thor's Hammer Radio. Back to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. I think earlier in the podcast, my mic was picking up some background noises. It's a little sensitive sometimes, but anyway, I'll work to fix that. Well, we're going to be setting up a Twitter account for this podcast. It's going to be Alex Thorson at Thor's Hammer Radio. That's Alex Thorson at Thor's Hammer Radio. So if you have any comments or questions, feel free to contact me there. That's going to be the best way to get a hold of me. And if you'd like, I will address your comments on the podcast. So feel free to comment on something and I'll try and bring it up. In the future, one of the things I'd like to do is get a call-in. Unfortunately, with the work I do full-time, it's hard to find a time to set aside to do that. But I will try and do that. That's one of the goals here. Anyway, let's move into our next segment here. All right, and for this next segment we're getting into is going to be about Trump's executive order versus the courts. And this executive order, as many of you know, was a moratorium on immigration from 7 countries and refugees, visas, all that. Those 7 countries are Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, Yemen, Somalia, and Sudan. And for obvious reasons, because those are terrorist hotspots, and many of those countries have no government. So, Trump's executive order was initially struck down by this Judge Robart. Now, this judge is way out of line. This guy has no business getting involved with this. But this is what the left does. They go court shopping to find the most radical leftist judges who completely ignore the law, too. And this guy is ignoring the law. This judge has no business getting involved with federal immigration law, seeing as how the president does have plenary power and prosecutorial discretion. But Trump and the administration appealed it, and this went to the Ninth Circuit Court. Now, the Ninth Circuit Court held a panel of 3 judges who reviewed it, and in a 3-0 decision, they struck it down. And they struck it down. They based it on his campaign comments, which they have no business doing. There's not even precedent for that. And his campaign comments initially about being a Muslim ban, which he scaled back. And then one of their other things was injury to the states. States of Washington and Missouri. What the hell is with these judges? Who the hell do they think they are? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm serious about this. These three judges, they're way out of line. Who the hell do they think they are? This is judicial tyranny right here. When these justices decide to completely ignore the law and ignore precedent and ignore the Constitution. Let me explain this in a simple way. Article 1, Section 8. That's where the power of naturalization comes from. It is exactly in there. Congress, the legislative branch, has the enumerated power to enforce naturalization, or to, you know, the law of naturalization. And the president, being the head of the executive branch, enforces that law. Now, they've already established precedent for this, and hundreds of years back. And these courts know this. They should know this. No justice in the country, not even the Supreme Court, has the power to tell the executive branch they can't enforce the law. They don't have that power. This is judicial tyranny. When these justices on the Ninth Circuit, who are not acting in the spirit of the law, they're acting on radical left-wing values. That's what they're doing. They're acting on radical leftist politics. This is exactly what it is. This is insane. The states, according to the Ninth Circuit, the states allege that the teaching and research missions of their universities are harmed by the executive order's effect on their faculty and students, who are nationals of the seven affected countries. You gotta be kidding me. This is the weakest and stupidest argument. Hey, let me explain the little background in terms of the standing that the president has. We'll go way back in history here. 1799, this is from a Supreme Court justice. Any alien coming into this country must or ought to know that this being an independent nation, it has all the rights concerning the removal of aliens which belong by law of nations to any other. That while he remains in the country in the character of an alien, he can claim no other privilege than such as an alien is entitled to. And consequently, whatever risque he may incur in that capacity is incurred voluntarily, with the hope that in due time, by his unexceptionable conduct, he may become a citizen of the United States. That's from Justice James Iredell from 1799. That's courtesy of Conservative Review, hat tip to Daniel Horowitz there. And Daniel Horowitz, by the way, he's talked a lot about judicial tyranny and stolen sovereignty. This is what happens when the courts become way too powerful. You know, and the Constitution was set up, the courts were actually the weakest branch. And the presidency was a lot weaker, too. The most powerful branch, when it was set up, was a legislative branch. And they did that for a reason. You know, the left has been constantly pushing against that. They push against the idea of having to push laws through the legislature and having to have this gridlock, as they call it. They joke about it and they mock it, this gridlock in politics. Gridlock's a good thing. You want to know why? Because every time our government passes laws or regulation, it takes more of your liberty away. That's exactly what happens. And the court was there to just interpret the laws that were passed and make sure they were constitutional. That's it. That's it. And by the way, the only court that the Constitution actually creates is the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court. All the other courts are created by the legislative branch. So, Congress could come in and completely limit the Ninth Circuit Court's power. They could. They have that ability to. They also have the ability to impeach justices. And they could break up the power in other ways, too. They could split the Ninth Circuit apart into two different districts. And in fact, that's an idea that's actually starting to be floated around now. But Congress has the power to basically shut down the courts. So when you hear these leftists talk about how the courts are the supreme law of the land, no, they're not. No, they absolutely are not. And we need to get out of this stupid thinking where some justice in a black robe is holier than thou and he's wiser than all men. Yeah, you know what happens when you have a bunch of wise men making a bunch of laws and ruling over? Yeah, that's called judicial tyranny. That is not Americanism. That is not federalism. That is not constitutional whatsoever. Let me get into more precedent here. Take a look at this one. Now, this is also courtesy of Conservative Review, hat tip Daniel Horowitz. This is the Immigration and Nationality Act. Section F, suspension of entry or imposition by restrictions of president. Whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interest of the United States. Notice, interest of the United States, not the interest of the immigrant, the alien. Foreigners do not have constitutional rights. They don't. The reason why? Because when they're overseas, we don't have any jurisdiction over them. Nobody has a right to emigrate here, or any other country for that matter. Americans don't have a right to emigrate to Great Britain, or Canada, or Australia, or you name it. We don't have a right to do that. Because guess what? The governments of those countries have the power to say, no, go ahead. Go away. Let's see. Going forward on this, he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary. Notice there's no time limit on that either. As he shall deem necessary, he being the president. Suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem to be appropriate. In other words, President Trump, and any president for that matter, can impose whatever restrictions, be it from this country or this particular ethnicity of people. Yeah, believe it or not, it's actually constitutional, completely constitutional, to have a complete Muslim ban, or a complete Jewish ban, or a complete Christian ban, or if he wants to say all Russians, you can't come in. I mean, Trump can do that. Any president can. If theoretically, Trump could actually say the U.S. is closing off their borders to every single country in the world. He can do that, believe it or not. That is constitutional. Whenever the Attorney General finds that a commercial airline has failed to comply with the regulations of the Attorney General relating to requirements of airlines for the detection of fraudulent documents used by passengers traveling to the United States, including the training of personnel in such detection, the Attorney General may suspend the entry of some or all aliens transported to the United States by such airline. Okay, so this Immigration and Nationality Act, this is Congress, which set out a law, created a law, and delegated this authority to the president and also the attorney general in this case, too, because the attorney general is the highest law enforcement officer in the land, so he has the power to enforce this. So, this Immigration Nationality Act, this was Congress giving the authority to the executive branch. So it's right there. And there's even more examples of this. Here's one of the big points on this, and this is a disturbing direction that our country's been going in. For any of you who know the Constitution, or hell, have at least seen Schoolhouse Rock, there's only one branch of government that can create law. That's the legislative branch. The executive can't create law. The Supreme Court, or any court, cannot create law. This Ninth Circuit Court, in essence, is working towards basically redefining or recreating a new law that the president can't do this, but they don't have that power. But we've been going towards this, unfortunately, for quite a while. I mean, this, you know, going back to when the Supreme Court imposed same-sex marriage on all 50 states, the Supreme Court didn't have that power. They don't have the power to create legislation out of thin air, but they did it anyway. And this is the unfortunate general direction that our country's been going in, is this judicial tyranny where judges in black robes are creating new legislation by their ruling. And that is not constitutional at all. Anyway, let's look into some more law and precedent. For those of you familiar with United States versus Arizona, this was a decision where Arizona, they pushed through a law, or tried to push through a law called SB 1070. What Governor Jan Brewer was trying to get through was Arizona was trying to enforce federal immigration law. They were empowering their local law enforcement to do that. Well, the Obama administration didn't like that, so they took them to court. And this went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-3 decision, with Justice Anthony Kennedy being the majority opinion. Let's take a look at what he has to say. So, in Anthony Kennedy's opinion, and He says the following: the government of the United States has broad, undoubted power over the subject of immigration and the status of aliens. And he cites different court cases along here. The authority rests in part on the national government's constitutional power to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. That's the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And its inherent power as a sovereign to control and conduct relations with foreign nations. The federal power to determine immigration policy is well settled. An immigration policy can affect trade, investment, tourism, and diplomatic relations for the entire nation, as well as the perceptions and expectations of aliens in this country who seek the full protection of its laws. It's fundamental that foreign countries concerned about the status, safety, and security of their nationals must be able to confer and communicate on this subject with one national sovereign, not the 50 separate states. So Anthony Kennedy is making the case in his majority opinion that foreign countries, when they inquire about their citizens, they need to be able to talk directly to one person, that is the president, not 50 separate state governors. And which is why Anthony Kennedy is delivering his opinion towards ruling in this instance in Barack Obama's favor, because Barack Obama was the president at the time. Let's look at some more of his opinion here. Congress has specified which aliens may be removed from the United States and the procedures for doing so. Aliens may be removed if they were inadmissible at the time of entry. So, right here, Anthony Kennedy's talking about, you know, aliens who are not admissible at the start. So obviously, not everyone has a right to come here, do they? Or have been convicted of certain crimes or meet other criteria set by federal law. The principal feature of the removal system is the broad discretion exercised by immigration officials. So he's right here, prosecutorial discretion. Discretion in the enforcement of immigration law embraces immediate human concerns. Unauthorized workers trying to support their families, for example, likely pose less danger than alien smugglers or aliens who commit a serious crime. Yeah, this is where Barack Obama, taken from this opinion, got this whole thing about, you know, the dreamers and all that crap like that. But Anthony Kennedy is bringing up all the stuff about prosecutorial discretion, but he's building up a case in this Supreme Court case, United States versus Arizona in 2010, about why the president has plenary power and prosecutorial discretion. Immigration policy shapes the destiny of the nation, for the history of the United States is in part made of the stories, talents, and lasting contributions of those who crossed oceans and deserts to come here. Okay, yeah. The national government has significant power to regulate immigration. With power comes responsibility. Yes, is Spider-Man coming out here. Arizona may have understandable frustrations with the problems caused by legal immigration while that process continues, but the state may not pursue policies that undermine federal law. Okay, now, right there, Anthony Kennedy is referring to the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. Now, the Supremacy Clause, for those of you who are not familiar with it, if there's a conflict between federal law and state law, or anyone further down, like, say, a local law or municipal law, the federal law is the one you follow. That takes priority. And by the way, the Supremacy Clause, this right here, is something that sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are violating. They're violating it openly. And you notice the Ninth Circuit is not ruling anywhere on that. Yeah, the Ninth Circuit's not saying anything about sanctuary cities or sanctuary states. In fact, there's many judges that aren't even ruling on anything like that. But these sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are in direct violation of the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's important to see from this ruling, from the Supreme Court of the United States, from Anthony Kennedy, where he's affirming that Barack Obama, in this instance, but he's affirming just the president in general, has the power to be in charge to regulate immigration. And now the left is saying, no, the president doesn't have that power. Yes, he does. Now, you got these morons that keep going on about, well, this is unconstitutional or this is illegal. No, it's not. No, it's absolutely not. The left had no problem with Barack Obama being in charge of everything. And now that, now the shoe's on the other foot. Now we have President Trump in. And now the left's going crazy. Well, you know what? These leftists, they set up the centralization of government for their own benefit. And now that it's a person in the other party, and now they're against it. But this is what the left does. They centralize power, and then when the opposition party then uses that to go a different direction, then they whine and scream about it. Well, they're the ones that created this in the first place. And notice, too, the leftists are using the courts to try and override something that is actually supported by a large number of Americans. There was actually a poll that came out recently that showed that just about half the country is in favor of this ban, this moratorium on immigration from these seven countries. And by the way, where did Trump even get the idea for these seven countries? Well, I'm about to show you. This is a press release from Department of Homeland Security. This is from February 18th of 2016. So, they announced today it's continuing implementation of the Visa Waiver Program Improvement and Terrorist Travel Prevention Act of 2015. So this is a Barack Obama thing. With the addition of Libya, Somalia, and Yemen as three countries of concern. And they join Iran, Iraq, Sudan, and Syria as countries subject to restrictions for visa waiver program travel for certain individuals. So, Donald Trump literally just cut and paste directly from Barack Obama's Department of Homeland Security for their travel restrictions. So, this is actually a really prudential executive order that Trump issued. Trump could have done a complete ban on every Muslim country out there, or the entire Middle East. And he would have been constitutionally justified in doing so. But he didn't. He actually did a really prudential move by only picking seven countries, and the same seven countries that Obama's White House identified. So, this outrage, this faux outrage that the leftists are going on about, this is nonsense. Now, if they want to debate the morality of it, or they want to debate that, oh, well, it's kind of mean or mean-spirited, the way that Chuck Schumer was whining his crocodile tears about it. Okay, fine, you want to debate that, but the constitutionality of it, they want to say that it's illegal. Any honest broker knows damn well that this is absolutely legal and it's constitutional. And the Ninth Circuit, they are way out of line. That is judicial tyranny, and they have no business being involved with this. Here's one more thing that I want to go over with you. This is Hat Tip, The Independent. So, Chatham House did a survey of countries in the European Union about, and this was a survey about a just blanket Muslim ban in general. Well, guess what? They found that right around 55% across the board, like average, agreed with a full Muslim ban. And the total disagree was only about 20%. And they stated no individual country of these 10 did the total disagree go above 32%. Even in Spain, which had the lowest total agree, was about 40%. In fact, the amount of people that were neither agree nor disagree, in other words, didn't really care, were apathetic, or didn't really have an opinion, was actually higher than the total disagree. That neither was about 25%. They have a data point chart, and I want to break this down because this is actually really important. So for both men and women, the total agree was above 50%, whereas the total disagree was only about 20%. And when they break it down by age group, the young age, the 18 to 29-year-olds, which was the lowest of the agree, even they, 44% agree, and disagree was only at 27%. So that tells you something about even the youth in these European countries, you know, what they think about this. And the reason why, it's obvious. It's because they've had this unfettered immigration from the Muslim world, and they're being overrun. They've had reports all for the last, what, 2 years, 3 years, maybe even further, of these crimes that are being committed by refugees, by Muslim refugees. And there's now these no-go zones in these heavily refugee areas. Al, the Muslim refugees, they're even now burning down their own refugee centers for the stupidest reasons. One I saw was because it ran out of gummy bears or some stupid thing like that. Breaking this down even more, in terms of the education, the lowest amount of the total degree was in the undergraduate and postgraduate degree. Even that was 48% agree, and total disagree was 27%. Geographic location, the people that live in the city was the lowest amount on the total agree. Even that was 52%, and the total disagree was 23%. So even people that live in the major cities, which tend to be your more liberal areas, your more uber-leftist areas, even they were twice the amount of agree to disagree in terms of who wants this Muslim ban. And keep in mind, the question posed was a total ban on Muslims. It wasn't even this really prudential Donald Trump-esque order of only seven certain countries. So this tells you a lot about what people in Europe are experiencing and their attitudes. And it's obvious because they're being overrun and they are sick of their countries turning into a third world hellhole. That's what's going on here. And I'm sorry, but this is what's going to happen to our country if we let this continue. These courts and these leftists, they're nuts. They're out of control. Now, I'm sorry, but nobody has a right to immigrate here. And if they're seriously pushing this forward that now, oh yeah, they have a constitutional right to come here. Well, hell, I mean, I guess that means that 7 billion people throughout the world have a constitutional right to emigrate to this country. Are you kidding me? That's insane. We don't have a country at that point. No, they don't have any right to come to this country. We have to be a sovereign nation. We've always been this way, and we've always had our own sovereignty, and we've always had the ability for the president and the Congress to say, no, you can't come here, and we're putting a limit on how many people are coming through. What do you think Ellis Island was there for? Did we just take in every single person that decided to waltz on through or decided to take a boat over? No, we screened people out. We didn't just let a whole en masse flood of people come into this country. We absolutely had a very, very structured and very regulated immigration system. And we had periods of ebb and flow. In other words, we had periods where, you know, we have a lot of immigrants coming and then we'd scale it back. And you can see this throughout history where, you know, you look at the numbers coming through Ellis Island where they go up and then they come down. But ever since the 1960s, I think 1965, right? And it's been going off the rail, especially since this was a Democrat thing, ever since they established this chain migration through anchor babies. And ever since 1965, we have had unfettered, unstopped immigration and illegal immigration. Now, they keep bringing up this number of 11 to 12 million people for illegal immigrants. You know, they were saying the same thing a decade ago. So, we've had nonstop illegal immigration, yet the number hasn't changed in over a decade. Yeah, right. We've got to be, that's a problem, we don't know. We have got to be at least 20 million or more. And that's a huge problem. We do not know. And this is the problem with the people coming in from these 7 countries in particular, but just from the Middle East in general. We don't know who they are. They're coming from places that are in active civil wars and a terrorist state. There is no government. We cannot vet them. And James Comey said as much, what was it, last year, where he said you can query them through whatever means you want, but if there is no data to query, you're going to come up with the same result, which is nothing. That's what James Comey said. And this was back, what, in 2015, 2014? So we've already established we cannot vet these refugees because they have no government from the places they're coming from. There is no government that our intelligence agencies, that our executive branch, that we can contact them and figure out who they are. And there's been so many instances in Europe where they're using fake visas, they're using fake passports. And ISIS, and this is the important point, ISIS has told us directly that they are going to take advantage of the refugee system to infiltrate their fighters. Now, if these idiot leftists want to completely ignore that, well, that's their problem. But we're not going to ignore it. I'm sorry, when ISIS themselves says that they're going to take advantage of the refugee system, they're going to use this as a tactic to get their jihadis inside Europe and the United States, yeah, I believe them. We got to take them seriously when they say this. You know, sorry, your hurt feelings don't trump national security. They just don't. Now get over it. And no, you can't impeach Trump because you got offended. You don't impeach a president for that. We don't prosecute anyone in the United States because somebody was offended. That's not how the law works. So this is very important to understand that ISIS has said they're going to use this refugee crisis to infiltrate their fighters. This is important to understand that nobody has a right to emigrate to any country. And this is important to see the attitude, overall attitude in Europe, which is being overrun ever since Angela Merkel made the completely bonehead decision to say as many people as possible come into Germany. Which, of course, they then used to filter throughout the entire European Union. Because guess what? The way the European Union system works is that once you're in the European Union, in any country, you can go anywhere in any country that's in the European Union. You can cross the border between France and Germany just the same as if you were going from Alabama over to Georgia. It's that easy. That's how completely open borders the European Union is. And that's why once these refugees are in places like Germany or France, they can then go anywhere in the European Union. That's why they're having these problems. So we do not want our country to end up that way. And you know, I hate to say this because I have relatives that live in Germany and in England. My mother's whole side of the family is British, so I have relatives in Great Britain and in Germany because I have a cousin who lives in Germany. And so I hate to say this, but a lot of the European countries in this EU, they're kind of screwed. Now, the UK thankfully voted for Brexit. Hopefully they kick that off and get it going as soon as possible. Because I think it's not too late for the UK. They've got several issues, but I think they can turn it around. Unfortunately, and this is just my personal opinion, but I think in the case of Germany, it might be too late for them. But here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. It's not too late for us. We in America, we can turn this around, and we can put a stop to this before it gets too crazy. Because we need to. We need to secure our damn border. Because this happens every single time. We've been doing this border security thing for decades. Ronald Reagan, he tried to secure the border, and Congress lied to him. People keep bringing up, well, Reagan passed amnesty. Yeah, the reason why he passed amnesty is because Congress promised, as part of their bill, doing what Congress usually does, especially when the Democrats control it, where they submit a bill and they attach all these different riders and all this pork added on with a bill. They do this all the time where no bill they pass is always exactly what it is. They always attach little riders to it. But the Democrat-controlled Congress, led by Tip O'Neill, who was a drunk idiot, and Reagan hated him, by the way, but they promised to secure the border if Reagan would go through with their amnesty thing. So Reagan granted amnesty in 1986. Well, guess what? They lied to him, and Reagan actually later admitted that that was the biggest mistake, and he'd never, ever do that again. And it's understandable why, because Congress screwed him. They completely lied to him. And so we've been going back and forth with this secure the border for decades. This has been going on a long time, and we have to get this down. It is a moral imperative for our citizens, our fellow countrymen, to secure the border so that they are safe. The people that matter are American citizens. I'm sorry, but I don't care about foreigners who want to come to this country just because, oh, they love it or whatever. You know, the classic Bush, Jeb Bush said, they come here for love. Yeah, okay, whatever. I don't care about that. We need to care about our citizens. Enough of this our country is a nation of immigrants, crap. No, we're a nation of citizens. We're a nation of citizens. There's no such thing as a country that's a nation of immigrants. You know, there's all these countries where people have emigrated to and lived there. And yes, our country, people emigrated to this country, but they became citizens. We are a country of citizens. Stop putting these immigrants, these foreigners, these especially illegal immigrants, the way the left puts the illegal immigrant, they're lawbreakers, puts them on some kind of pedestal. While they don't care in the least for just shutting down and spitting upon the citizen. Now, we are a nation of citizens, we're a nation of laws, and we need to remember that, and we need to get back to that before it's too late for our country. Alright, well, we're coming up to our break from the second portion, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, in our last bit, about Trump's position on the New START Treaty, and some comments that he's made. So we'll be right back on Thor's Hammer Radio. Welcome back, folks, to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. If you want to leave any comments or questions, please contact me at AlexThorson@ThorsHammerRadio on Twitter. For our final segment, we're going to get into Donald Trump and his dealings with Russia. There's a report that came out that I want to go over with you. First, before we get into that, though, we have to address a few things about the left crazy attack against Trump, labeling him as some kind of Manchurian candidate in Putin's pocket. Now, this is just ridiculous. Now, with President Trump, there are a lot of legitimate criticisms about him, and he does tend to put his foot in his mouth quite a lot of the time. But this attack on him about him being un-American, this is just stupid. And you know, there's even some in the that put themselves in this Never Trump category. Some even conservatives out there that are kind of floating this idea that he's not American. Look, I'm not naive. I know full well that Donald Trump is not a conservative. He's a populist. And in fact, the man said as much, too. But can we at least be honest about this here? Can we understand that just because he's a populist and he's not a conservative and he's doing things a little differently, that doesn't mean he's anti-American. And he's certainly not a puppet for Vladimir Putin. I mean, there's so many legit criticisms you can have of Trump, like his trade policies and some of the dumb things that he says, but calling him un-American or some kind of Manchurian candidate for the Russians, this is just stupid. And we have to spend so much time defending him from these stupid attacks that a lot of the dumb things that he says almost get completely unreported or unnoticed. Well, and sometimes Trump doesn't exactly help his case. So we have this footage here, this audio clip. He did an interview with Bill O'Reilly, and he puts his foot in his mouth here. Here, take a listen to this, folks.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right,
major fight, that's a good thing. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. We got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
Yeah. Well, a couple things about this clip. Now, I don't have too much of an issue with the first half of Trump's statement. If he thinks he can have a civil and amicable relationship with Vladimir Putin, Then I say, okay, yeah, go for it. See if he can make it work. But yeah, it's definitely preferable to a war with Russia. I can tell you, someone who's been downrange to Afghanistan, wars, it's not fun. It's no joke. There's nothing romantic about it. And it's definitely painful when you hear the taps being played because a soldier's been killed in combat. So yeah, if Trump's able to go the Reagan route and able to, as Reagan did, defeat the Soviet Union without firing a shot, then I say all power to Trump. The second half, no, I have a huge problem with that. Now, this is where Trump needs to get hammered for this. This is stupid. Oh, yeah, we've got killers, too. There's no moral equivalency between America and Russia, especially American Vladimir Putin. No way in hell. We just got done with 8 years of Mr. World Apology Tour President. We just got done with 8 years of that. We don't need any more moral equivalency with America's enemies. We're not going to tolerate that stuff. And Trump really needs to get a handle on this stuff. And it's comments like this that give the left ammunition to paint him as some kind of Putin apologist or some kind of person who's in the pocket of the Russians. So Trump needs to tone this stuff back. Okay, that's it for that clip. So moving on to what I really want to get into. There was a report that came out recently. This is courtesy of Reuters. So Reuters reported on the fact that Trump had a phone call with Vladimir Putin, and it was about the New START Treaty. The New START Treaty was an updated treaty signed by Obama that was all about nuclear arms reduction between the United States and Russia. And according to Reuters, Trump talked to them about it, and he paused to ask his aides in an aside what the treaty was, these sources said. These are leakers. And Trump's going to have he's going to have problems with this throughout his administration. These people inside the White House and the staff that are leaking information to the press, especially from the State Department, because there's a lot of political operatives, a lot of leftists there that leak this stuff. But anyway, so Trump was talking to Vladimir Putin about it, and he had to pause to ask his aides about the treaty. And then Trump told Vladimir Putin that the treaty was one of the several bad deals negotiated by the Obama administration, saying that the New START favored Russia. Trump's 100% correct on this. It does favor Russia. And I'll get into a bit exactly how it does. And according to the sources, Trump also talked about his own popularity. Okay, yeah, I don't care about that. Trump can tout his own popularity all he wants. What I do care about is that he's honing in on this New START treaty, and it is a treaty that favors Russia. Now, the liberals, and even some of the never Trump, they're beating up on Trump for the fact that, oh, he had to pause and ask his aides. Oh, you know, I have no problem with Trump having his aides there to ask him about what the treaty was. I don't expect Trump to know everything. I don't expect him to be perfect. And seeing as how this is a guy who's never even held public office before, I don't have any problem with Trump doing this. In fact, I actually like the fact that he has his aides there to ask him about this instead of Trump trying to do this on his own. I much prefer that. So, but of course, the leftists are going to paint Trump as some kind of idiot and use this as one of their little cherry-picked pieces of information. And this is nothing new, too. The left has been doing this with Republican presidents for decades. They did the same with George W. Bush. They painted him as an idiot, too, because of the way he talks and some of the way he kind of stumbled a bit and a few dumb comments he made. George W. Bush was a fighter pilot. Keep that in mind. And, they also painted Reagan this way, too. They tried to paint Reagan as some kind of idiot. They painted Reagan as a shoot-from-the-hip guy who wasn't well-read. Tried to say that he was suffering Alzheimer's. For those of you who ever studied up on Ronald Reagan, he didn't develop Alzheimer's until several years after he got done with his presidency. And this bit about Reagan not being well-read, Reagan was one of the most well-read presidents out there. The left tried to paint him, say, well, because he was an actor, so he doesn't really know what he's doing and all that. Reagan knew exactly what he was doing. He was a very well-read man, a very eloquent speaker. That's why he was called the Great Communicator. and the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, the books that are in there, a lot of those books are books that Reagan had on his own personal collection. Books like The Law by Frederick Bastiat. This is a very well-read president. So anyway, going back to Trump with his New START treaty. So what I want to hone in on here is when Trump said the New START treaty favored Russia. And he's right. So I want to go to the New START treaty. And this is right from the government's own page. So the New START treaty. So strategic offensive reductions. The treaty between the United States of America and the Russian Federation on measures for further reduction and limitation of strategic offensive arms, also known as the New START treaty, entered into force February 5, 2011. Under the treaty, the United States and Russia must meet the treaty's central limits on strategic arms by February 5, 2018, 7 years from the date the treaty entered force. Each party has the flexibility to determine for itself the structure of its strategic forces within the aggregate limits of the treaty. These limits are based on the rigorous analysis conducted by Department of Defense planners in support of the 2010 Nuclear Posture Review. I said this is directly from the State Department's own site. So the aggregate limits, 700 deployed intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs, deployed submarine-launched ballistic missiles, SLBMs, and deployed heavy bombers equipped for nuclear armaments. Keep something in mind, ladies and gentlemen. We, the United States, are the ones who have the monopoly, almost, on deployed submarine and heavy bombers. By the way, the ICBMs, submarine-launched ballistic missiles, and deployed heavy bombers. That right there is the nuclear triad that several politicians will talk about. And we, the United States, have the overwhelming amount of this compared to Russia. A lot more of them, or at least we did. So this is a reduction primarily for us. 1,550 nuclear warheads on deployed ICBMs, deployed SLBMs, and deployed heavy bombers equipped for nuclear armaments. And 800 deployed and 9 non-deployed ICBM launchers, SLBM launchers, and heavy bombers equipped for nuclear armaments. These are the aggregate limits, as in you can't go past them. Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you a question here. Now, we America, especially under Obama, of course, he honored this treaty and has America honoring this because this was Obama and his administration's own creation. Ask yourself honestly, you think Russia's going to follow with this? No, I don't think so. No, not at all. In fact, they've been, they have a habit of reneging on treaties. In fact, actually, I'll go to one instance here. Take a look at this. This is hat tip, the Washington Free Beacon. So nuclear arms inspectors recently discovered that Russia is violating the New START arms treaty by improperly eliminating SS-25 mobile missiles. This is from June of 2016, so this is a year ago. Actually, not even. And during a recent visit to a Russian missile base, U.S. technicians found critical components of the SS-25s, which are road mobile ICBMs, had been unbolted instead of cut, which cutting them would have just permanently disabled the components. It goes on. Additionally, American inspectors were unable to verify missiles slated for elimination had been destroyed. Instead, only missile launch canisters were inspected. So no missiles, just the tubes, the canisters. As a result, inspectors were unable to determine if the missiles were properly eliminated as required by the 2010 Arms Treaty. Additionally, inspectors found that Russian missile forces had improperly displayed missile components slated for destruction by failing to leave them in the open for monitoring by so-called national technical means of verification, which a euphemism for spy satellites and other sensors. And on-site inspectors reported that they were unable to verify that Russia had completed all New START treaty cuts to launchers declared eliminated by Russia between 2011 and 2015, a four-year period. One official stated that Russia will meet their treaty elimination goals by using empty launchers from retired and retiring missile service. Missile systems. They're basically cutting up launchers that don't carry missiles anyway. Okay, in other words, what they're saying is that Russia's basically taken their old junk that doesn't even work anymore and leaving that out there to make it look like they're complying with the treaty. This is exactly what I'm talking about. This New START treaty, it imposes a massive restriction on us. Keep in mind, we are the leader in the amount of nuclear weapons and the whole nuclear triad that I talked about earlier. Russia lags behind. This New START treaty scales back our nuclear capabilities so significantly to the point and puts us and Russia on equal footing, theoretically. But what's going on in reality is that the Russians, what they're doing is they're putting out their old junk to make it look like they're complying with the treaty, and they're building new weapons. That's exactly what they're doing. They're violating it. And they've done this before. They've talked about, House Armed Services Committee Chairman Mac Thornberry said that whether it's Russian violations of the Open Skies Treaty, the Biological and Chemical Weapons Conventions, multiple violations of the INF Treaty, this administration, he's talking about Obama administration, has proven singularly unconcerned with arms control compliance. Yeah, and that's just it. And here's some more. This is from John Bolton. And John Bolton is the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, a former State Department undersecretary for arms control. So Bolton's quite familiar with this. And Bolton says, Russian denials, obstructionism, and outright deception are nothing new in their efforts to prevent effective verifications of arms control treaties. And just imagine what Moscow has taught Tehran. Yeah. So, we've seen from actual news reports and from government officials that this New START treaty is something that Russia's not complying with. And this goes to the heart of my matter here, heart of my point. Donald Trump is not the best friend of Vladimir Putin. You want to talk about Manchurian candidate if you want. You want to know who's Vladimir Putin's best friend and ally? Barack Obama. Barack Hussein Obama, former president, failure, loser, who completely destroyed our country. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I know all the radical leftists, you don't want to hear that. No, you want to worship your precious idol, your golden heifer at the base of Mount Sinai. Yeah, I know, but guess what? It's true. Barack Obama is the one who's Vladimir Putin's best friend and ally. It was the Obama administration, along with Hillary Clinton, who gave 20% of America's uranium to the Russians in the Uranium One deal. Hillary Clinton couldn't sign off on that by herself. It required the signatures of 7 secretaries, including the Attorney General. These were all Obama appointees. So yeah, 20% of our uranium went to the Russians, to Vladimir Putin. Furthermore, Barack Obama is the one who drew the red line in Ukraine. And Putin walked right across that, laughed at him. Furthermore, the Russian restart, yeah, that worked so well, not. And Russia took over Crimea. Furthermore, the red line in Syria, yeah, that didn't work either, because Obama wouldn't enforce anything. He didn't have a spine, and Putin knows it. And so he walked all over him then. Furthermore, Obama was the one who armed up the Iranians, gave them $150 billion, taxpayer money, to the Iranians. Furthermore, Russia's now started a military alliance with the Iranians and the Syrians under Bashar al-Assad. Furthermore, the Russians have been supplying uranium to the Iranians, and Obama was fully complicit in that with giving him all that, Vladimir Putin, all that uranium for the Uranium One deal, and all that money to Tehran. And furthermore, all the side deals in the Iranian nuclear deal give all these special benefits, including, by the way, having provisions that we have to physically defend Iranian sites from airstrikes that, say, the Israelis might launch. Oh, and furthermore, Obama's done a hell of a job crashing down on our allies, like Israel. Yeah. Yeah, don't give me this crap about Donald Trump being Putin's best friend and ally. That was Obama. That was Hillary Clinton. Go look at the actual actions that have been taken, and you'll see who the real friend of Russia is there. President Trump, on the other hand, well, you know, if he's pushing back on this New START treaty, because he correctly, in this case, recognizes that the New START treaty favors Russia because it severely limits our own capabilities while Russia goes and violates it at will, and there doesn't seem to be anyone to stop it, or anyone really caring to stop it. And just like John Bolton said, just imagine what Moscow has taught Tehran. We already know that the Iranians are violating the terms of the Obama-Iran deal. They started doing that immediately after it was signed. And the impositions for that, they have like, what is it, a 28-day window? 28-day heads-up notification? So yeah, this is just... This is just stupid to call Trump the ally of Putin. Now, if anyone, it was the former administration that just got out, the failure. Now, in Trump's case, so this report that just came out that he's looking at this New START treaty and trying to renegotiate it or come up with something new or put some leverage against Russia, this is good news. And we'll be monitoring to see where this goes. So, this is definitely a good thing that Donald Trump is doing. I want to commend him for it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've now come to the end of my first podcast here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Just summarizing, started off with the crazy conspiracy theories of the left concerning the UC Berkeley riots via Robert Reich, the crazy kook leftist right there. And then moving into the second segment, went over Trump's executive order and the left's insane attack, including those three Ninth Circuit justices that were way out of line, judicial tyranny to its core, when they knew damn well that Trump has plenary power and prosecutorial discretion, as laid out by years and years and years of precedent. And then in that third segment, wrapped it up with Trump's take on the New START treaty and some less than intelligent things Trump said in his little interview with O'Reilly. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, if you need, contact me. Questions, comments, concerns, contact me on Twitter at Alex Thorson at Thor's Hammer Radio. And please stay tuned. If you like this podcast, stay tuned for an upcoming podcast. I'm going to try and release one every Monday. So just keep tuned for an upcoming podcast. And that's going to wrap up this segment. So this is Alex Thorson signing off on Thor's Hammer Radio. Good night, and thank you for listening. Listen, everybody.